Hey, welcome back to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Brian DeNovellis. And the calendar is turning to June. June is upon us, and we're talking college basketball. How great is that? This sport has become like the NFL, right? Thanks to the portal and NIL. This is a 12-month sport, 11 and a half months out of the year. For better or for worse, we are here. The big news this week in the Tri-State was Alex Caraban withdrawing his name from the NBA draft in the 11th hour, returning to UConn. And here is the man himself, the man who has resurrected UConn basketball, brought it back to prominence, to places they've never been before. He's didn't have time to celebrate his back-to-back championships because he was recruiting for next year. And now I finally got him. Got you to come on, Dan. I'm so glad to have you on. Dan Hurley, UConn men's basketball coach. How you doing, Dan?
Good, Brian, and happy we could put it together. We've been trying to get this together for a month or so. So happy you're able to get on with you, my friend.
Well, if you didn't do, thank you. And if you didn't have, like, you know, 52 podcasts and you know, throwing out the first pitch and everything, I mean, you know, why are you so popular, Dan?
I mean, listen, I wasn't very popular before the back-to-backs, man. So the back-to-backs have helped.
Listen, we would have talked about this. I mean, you know, I go through what ifs. I'm sure you do. You know, God forbid you ever lost to Iona. You were losing at halftime. who knows what your seat would have felt like, you know? So
yeah, your mind goes, you know, your mind takes you back a lot. I think I think a lot about, you know, more so, you know, the New Mexico State, just kind of where we were, you know, at that point. That Iona game, even though we're down at the half, I felt really good about how that game was playing, and I didn't think that that it was sustainable for them to continue to play with us. So, but yeah, you think about those moments and where we are now, it blows your mind.
You know, it's a credit to the hard work that you put in. I've read so many things and heard different interviews with you, and I want to get to a lot of things, Dan, but let's talk about the news of this week. I mean, Alex Caraban returning. What would you have put his return on, you know, a week ago? Was it 50-50? Were you confident or not?
Yeah, I think, I mean, just probably have a lot of thoughts, you know, on the process. I think for any player, if it's not clear, like clear time to go, like, or if it's a really hard decision, then I think you it's in your best interest to stay in college. I think when it's time to go to the NBA, it should be really crystal clear. Like the NBA is really pulling you, right? Really, really making it clear that it's time for you to go. I think that's when you have your best chance to have a successful NBA career. And I think, you know, although Alex had, you know, guaranteed contracts, you know, for him that were presented, you know, in the second round variety, but they were guaranteed contracts. You know, he believes, and we believe, that he's a first round quality player and that there was more development for him in college. There was a better chance for him to develop over the course of the next year at the college level to become a better player and to become a first round pick, you know, return as an All-American, you know, potentially Big East Player of the Year, potentially lead us to a three-peat. There's a lot of upside to him with NIL and everything that's now in place, that it just made more sense for him to return to UConn than it did to potentially be a second rounder, even though the money was going to be guaranteed.
There are still guys out there, right, that they don't care. They want to try to get to the NBA, and they know that if they're a second-round pick, they're gone. And I guess it depends on the situation. It just sounds like Alex really made a strong, smart, educated decision that was in his best interest. And a year from now, he's hoping will pay dividends.
Yeah, I think that he's a very smart guy and very mature. He's one of the best players in the country. And I think that, you know, with the construction of next year's team, I think it's going to put him in a position to develop both as a leader, as a man, his skill set as a player, to really put the finishing touches on what he needs to become, to become a player that can be drafted 18th, can be drafted 20th, can enter an NBA organization with a even greater commitment from the organization and be a fully grown NBA player, you know, when he gets to the NBA.
What are the scouts, what are the GMs and coaches saying that they'd like to see him work on?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I've had some conversations with some of the teams that he's worked out with and some others. I think, you know, being put in a position to be a, you know, more dynamic player at the offensive end, you know, to continue to, you know, to take and make more difficult shots, you know, on the move, creating more with the ball. He's made such huge strides in terms of his defensive abilities. So I think he's answered a lot of questions there. I think, you know, just becoming more dynamic offensively, and I think we'll put him in a position, you know, to be, you know, the clear number one option for us offensively, and you know, his leadership and how he carries himself, I think, will be something that will develop a lot this year too, as he'll be the unquestioned leader of the UConn Husky team.
Yeah. Complete this sentence then. Alex Caraban returning to UConn makes the Huskies what?
Yeah, I think, you know, with Alex, it keeps us where we've been the last couple of years, which is, you know, contenders for the championships that we want to play for this year, whether it's Big East, or regional championships to get to a Final Four, or national championship, you know, contention, which is where we want to be going into every season.
And how are you able to do this in an era of NIL and roster movement up and down? I mean, it's no longer the NECs, the MACs, you know, the low to mid levels that are rearranging their rosters every year. I mean, Kentucky's rearranging their roster, Duke. I mean, these are blue bloods having to, you know, find 7-8 new guys.
Yeah.
How are you able to do it?
Well, I think number one, it starts with the staff, being able to, you know, to have an incredible staff, to have the best staff in college basketball, and to be able to retain the group, and to keep Kamani and Luke and Tom Moore, you know, together, has certainly gives us an advantage, that continuity and how well we work together and our understanding of who fits us and how we want to play and what our culture is all about, and sticking to those principles and our formula. And, you know, and then obviously the type of people that we bring in, what we identify as the type of talent that could help us win things. We're not, you know, just looking at, you know, portal players or high school players just strictly as athletic traits and who's got great basketball upside talent. I think, you know, we're looking for people that are going to obviously have NBA level talent, but also, you know, these winning people, you know, do they have winning qualities? How competitive are they? Do they love basketball? Can they process the game because our style of play is complex? There's just a, you know, and then we don't have that big of a turnover in terms of, you know, we didn't lose, we lost a lot of key players, but we're also returning a lot of players from our program that know what we stand for. And we're going to trust our player development with the young guys like Solo Ball and Jalen Stewart and Jaden Ross, and our belief that we can get our freshmen ready to play.
Yeah. And you got to retain those, right? You were re-recruiting them all over again. You look at this roster and the depth, Dan. You know, I know last year you loved your roster and it was probably your most talented roster ever. I'm not looking to compare rosters, but, you know, there's already talk that there's, you know, 9 or 10 deep. Could you see this roster doing that and getting, you know, 9, 10 players in there?
Yeah, deepest team, I think, for me, in terms of just that one through 1 through 11, 12, with where we are. What we're considering using a 13th, maybe on a developmental player, but I think just the overall athleticism, talent is incredibly exciting. I think it's a younger team than maybe we're used to, but I think you'll see some changes, especially at the defensive end, to become a little bit more of a pressure team because we're going to want to extend that rotation more than we have the last 2 years.
Yeah, you had two of the best centers in college basketball, two of the best two-way centers, offensively and defensively. And I'm not saying that, Samson Johnson isn't there. He has athleticism that Klingon and Sanogo didn't possess, but it's a different type of you're losing a little physicality is what I'm getting at, Dan.
It's been a great rotation we've had there. Just a great center play, and Samson, kind of the things he was able to do in college last year were so unique at the center position. I mean, if you took his highlight reel of lob dunks and blocks and court running, and it was freakish the things he was able to do, and obviously losing Donovan hurts, just like losing Adama hurt. So we're going to develop Samson, and we're going to get his physical strength up and put a little bit more muscle on him, and he's going to take another huge step forward, and then bring in Taurus Reed in from Michigan. We feel like there's some untapped potential there. I remember watching him as a high school player, a top 30 player, and really being impressed with his physical gifts. And I think we're going to have that two center high level play, two different types of centers, a big physical guy that's maybe a little bit more like Sanogo and Taurus, and then Samson is even going to be a better version of what you saw last year.
Yeah, here you are, celebrating the parade and in downtown Hartford, and you're entertaining Taurus Reed, right? He was at the parade, and you were able to get him a couple of days later. I mean, these additions. Could you talk about the additions of Reed, Mahaney, and of course, a high five-star player in McNeely?
Yeah, we don't really use the different rankings that I guess the media groups have of who the best transfers are in the country, because it's all about fit, and it's about culture, and it's about your style of play. It's also about do these players have they been developed? Or is there untapped potential in terms of what you've seen of them? Have you seen the best of them? And we identified Taurus when his name went in the portal, and I've seen a bunch of Michigan games. He was a guy I felt like would be somebody that we feel like we could really develop. And Aiden Mahaney was somebody that we prepared for in the NCAA tournament, so we really knew the player, and felt like, in our offensive system, he's got a chance to flourish. Love his confidence, love his ability on the ball, off the ball, creativity. Love the swagger with Aiden. Love the fact that he comes from a big time program at St. Mary's. He's played in big games. Both those guys played at Michigan and played at St. Mary's. They've been in top programs, so they played in pressure spots. And then Liam, we love Isaiah, and we love Ahmad. So to add Liam to those two other freshmen that we think are top guys, Liam comes from Montverde. This guy is like, he's our type of guy. He's a basketball guy, high level of confidence, and a game I think that's going to translate to college. Pretty quickly. Obviously, freshmen have got to, they got to be good enough defensively so that they don't make you lose games. But this is a guy that comes in with a transferable shooting skill and a confidence and a physicality that's going to allow him to get on the court right away and help us.
All right, Dan, I'm going to put you on the spot here. All right. That team that you played on in St. Anthony's. What were you, a freshman or a sophomore when Bobby and Terry and Jerry were seniors? Right. Some still say it's the could be the greatest high school basketball team ever, undefeated, national champions. It's a different day and age, a different type of basketball, different type of style. But that Montverde team this year was pretty special as well. Put those two teams out there. Could you imagine something like that?
Oh man, right? I mean, it's like I could either get my dad pissed at me, or I could get Kevin Boyle pissed at me right now. It's like either one is like you know, getting between those two guys, those two coaches is probably not where you want to be. But to watch it, to look at the Montverde, Montverde's practices early in the year when we were going in there, and then watching them on TV, the size and the skill level of players today is just incredible. That their overall team size was amazing, and obviously the skill level, it was pretty incredible. And then going back to those St. Anthony teams, like, you know, Jerry Walker and my brother and Terry DeHare, like that backcourt of the number 7 pick, like 2 lottery picks, all-time leading scorer in the Big East, and I think the greatest point guard of all time in college. I think my brother is clearly the greatest. And then you have Roderick Rhodes, who was like the number one player in the country, you know, with Jerry Walker, who was like an all-time Big East guy and a great, great player, with Chris Jordan, who that'd be a heck of a matchup.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you had 11th and 12th guys on that team that played college basketball, right?
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't sniff the court. I was a good player. I'm self-deprecating about my career, but I was a good player. So, and I couldn't sniff the court.
Well, you waited your turn, just like players in this day and age. And at UConn, you know, if they want to stay there and be a part of a national championship contender, you know, that's what they have to do. So how did those teams under your dad? And also, listen, you know, those teams, I loved covering those teams that you had at St. Benedict's and the talent that you had there. And so many of them today, you know, they went on to the pros, they went on to the NBA, they went on to coaching. You know, how did those days prepare you for where you are today at UConn?
Yeah, I just think in so many ways, obviously playing for my dad and just being, you know, being around a master coach that was always trying to improve, just through osmosis, being in every practice, every huddle, every halftime, every post game, every summer league game, watching games on the satellite dish, just picking up all those things, almost like the Karate Kid, you know, like you're painting the fence and waxing the car. You don't even know it. Yeah, and then you get to St. Benedict's and all those things are kicking in terms of what you're trying to become as a coach, your constant pursuit of mastery and all the different aspects. But then I'm also, as a high school coach, you can't always control what your roster looks like. So you have to be able to adapt on a yearly basis, on a season-to-season basis. So your different styles of play, offensively, defensively, I think you don't end up married to any type of one system. So you're constantly adapting to your roster, which I think has really paid dividends for me in college, where you can't, I'm not stuck just being a one style coach, you know, Brian, in terms of I could coach in a lot of different ways and I don't have to look for one specific type of talented player to fit my system. I could coach a lot of different styles. So that's where the benefits. And I studied a lot of the coaches that were coming in and recruiting my players, what worked, what didn't work, who I thought ran a good program, who I thought was a fraud. So those things all really helped.
Yeah, I bet, you know, you are a son of a coach. You are a student of the game and always looking to improve yourself. So I've been dying to ask you this. You know, when I see the videos and when I see you going after fans in Providence and going after fans in Creighton, Dan, I just want to tell you, like, why are you engaging them? Why not just have deaf ears and just keep walking? What is it? What is it that hits that button?
It's probably, it's probably the Jersey City part of me. I know I'm 51 years old and I should be bigger than that. I should put the blinders on and walk out. Now, some of the situations are like at Providence. The gentleman was literally walking into the exit of where we were, heading down on the court to leave the arena. So he literally had walked himself into the path that I was trying to leave the court triumphantly. Like Creighton, they have a situation there, or they did, in terms of, the pathway that we're trying to exit and enter the court. It can't be a gauntlet of profanity that you have to walk through. So some of the situations, I think, were certainly not the healthiest for a visiting player or coach to walk through. Some of it is, I need to be able to walk away, but, I'm a pretty, I'm not too different than the person, that grew up in Jersey City. So when I get to some of those moments where I feel like I'm being, threatened or challenged by people that are being obscene, and they seem to be really in a strange way, really focused on me, in a way that seems strange, to go to a game to just focus your attention on the coach who's of the other team, and I'm going to yell at him for 2 hours. And sometimes, everyone just hits a breaking point. I wish sometimes I could walk away. I'm not always, I don't feel great about it when I see it after the fact, but you're also not in my shoes. It's easy for you to make an assessment. You've never been in that situation.
That's fair. That's fair. And I'm sure if it happens again, and hopefully it doesn't, we'll see how you react. But this goes back to your WWE. I mean, it's almost like you're okay being the hero and the villain. It reminds me of, because you're gonna remember this, like Rowdy Roddy Piper. Right, you're okay with being the villain in these places, and instead of Piper's Pit, maybe we'll call it Hurley's Pit or something.
Yeah, I don't. Our play style, I think it all, a lot of it contributes to just the way that we show up in terms of the way that we play too. I think the way that we practice is very intense. It's an intense style of basketball. It's a highly energized style of basketball. We really guard people and play incredibly hard. We rebound incredibly hard. We make relentless efforts all over the court. We play with incredible pace. We really get after people. So the style of play, it's lined up with the way that we coach. And then when you bring all of that into an opposing arena, it's going to bring out, it's going to bring something out of the opposing crowd, that our opposing crowds are more intense than, say, a team that runs a very deliberate style of play and the coach just sits on the bench and isn't very demonstrative. So
let's face it. You also talk the talk and walk the walk. So at some point in your career, you're like, I'm just going to say what I feel. Mm-hmm. And maybe some coaches who would be more reserved are thinking that, but they're not saying it.
Yeah.
You have the onions to say it. And
well, now I do.
Give you credit.
Yeah, now I do, because we've won it back to back. I think when you see it, obviously the coaches that have won the most are amongst the most outspoken coaches.
That's fair. That's fair. And you have the confidence to be yourself. So I give you a ton of credit for that. Dan, what about the schedule? What can you tell us about the schedule for next year? Maui Classic, I know you're looking forward to that. You got Baylor, Texas, Gonzaga. And Gonzaga coming, to your area. This is great stuff.
Yeah, it's great. I think, having that great non-conference home game with Baylor, I think we'll be two top 10 teams, two of the best teams. We're excited about bringing home and home series to our fans. So, starting the one with Texas, and obviously now scheduling's got complicated with non-conference because of these NIL games, and doing these neutral site events. Your fans want you obviously to have a talented enough team to be able to compete for championships, and part of that has become these neutral site games that were, whereas our fans are now losing those home and home on campus big time showdowns in the non-conference. So you hope that that could be resolved and the fans don't get screwed there. But the Gonzaga game, they'll be one of the best teams in the country next year. We'll have that one at MSG. The Maui thing, I think will be an awesome MTE over Thanksgiving for our fans and for college basketball. So we're excited about that. And then the Big East will be a war.
Any other teams that listen, my good friend Anthony Latina at Sacred Heart, you want to schedule in state with Sacred Heart or another
Yeah,
team
we
in the area?
will. We would definitely do Sacred Heart. They fit. We like. We like to schedule those with the teams that like to get up and down. They're really good offensively. Anthony does a great job with those guys. They play with great pace and they score a lot of points. That would be a fun one of those. We like to stay away from the really deliberate,
Okay,
really
I get
slow
that.
paced, those type of games. We don't really want to play those slow paced types of bye games. So yeah, we'd be interested in that one.
I get that. Well, listen, if I can negotiate that and sit bring you two to the table, whatever the cost is, I'm sure Anthony has a number in mind.
I know he does. I've heard it's a big number.
Listen, UConn can afford it, whatever it is. Let's make it happen. Last question. Can this team, I'm sure it's on your mind, you already mentioned it, three-peat. That's something that hasn't been done since UCLA won an ungodly seven straight, which is unthinkable. But three-peat, that's the goal. It's got to be the goal at this point, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, we start on Monday. The boys are back on campus. The group is here, but we're going to practice these next 4 weeks, and we're going to get after it pretty good, and have a great summer, and really push it. And I'll get my first chance to see these guys next week and start working with them, and then I think we'll have a better sense of what our eyes tell us. But I think on paper, right now, we feel great about our chances of being able to compete for the same things that we've gone for. And I read a lot and I see a lot about us. A lot of the prognosticators are, comparing us to last year's UConn team. And we don't have to be as good as last year's UConn team to compete for a national championship because we were so dominant. We were so dominant. We don't have to be as good as last year's UConn team to win it next year because in that NCAA tournament, there wasn't anyone that really truly challenged us. So maybe we're 6 points worse than last year's team. We could still win
Which still puts you at 6 to 8 points on the plus side.
Yeah, we could still win it. So you just. I guess you see a lot of things, and obviously a lot of it is fuel. And I could see us being underrated again going into next year. I don't know how folks can maybe make that same mistake. Maybe I guess they're just hoping to get it right one of these years.
I think you're right. And you know what? As long as they keep doubting, Dan Hurley is going to find that quote, find that article, and use it as bulletin board material to motivate his teams because nobody does it better, Dan. Thanks, brother.
UConn versus the world. That's
That's the way you like it, right?
right.
All right, Dan, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the summer. And when I'm up in Connecticut, I'm going to text you up and hopefully we can get together.
Let's do it, brother.
There you have it, Dan Hurley. Men's basketball coach of the two-time defending national champions. Will they get a three-peat? The quest has begun. Practices begin Monday, June 3rd. They got a month to get things going, and he will see where they are at. Listen, all I could say is this: keep betting against UConn, keep doubting them, and they will keep winning. Imagine this. Imagine if you had taken UConn in every single game of every single NCAA tournament over the last 2 years. You'd be undefeated. The money line, the spread, all they do is cover. Forget about all they do is win. All they do is cover. Don't bet against UConn. Keep doubting them, and they will keep proving you wrong. And I'm telling you right now, I'm going to predict it. The voters will not pick them number one in the country. Now, do they have the best team on paper? Debatable. Are there more teams out there with more talent? Probably. But I'll say this. There's no team in the country that has a better head coach or a better motivator than UConn and Dan Hurley. That is a take, okay? That is a take. Best coach in the country, best motivator, period. End of discussion. And that is the end of this podcast. I'm going to end it on that. Before I go, I'd like to thank our sponsors, the North Jersey Viper Softball Club. Check them out. They have a brand new website, northjerseyvipers.com. Get in touch with my man, Bob Germano. If you have a player, if you have a daughter, if you have a niece, a neighbor who wants to play high club level softball for some great people, northjerseyvipers.com. Check them out, Bob Germano. And of course, also Mike Supa of Ward White Sotheby's Realty. Mike is a trusted name in real estate. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, looking at Monmouth, Ocean Counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. Tell him Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Now is as good a time as ever to be house hunting or looking for properties down the Jersey Shore. Give Mike a call. And that'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Keep spreading the word. Keep downloading us. Share it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading and your support. I couldn't do it without you. My name is Brian Dinovelis. Until next time, so long.